From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Chicago's renowned Steppenwolf Theater celebrates its 25th anniversary this season. On today's Fresh Air, we talk about the early days of Steppenwolf with four alumni who have become stars. Co-founder Gary Sinise is known for his work in films such as Forrest Gump and Apollo 13. Co-founder Terry Kinney is a regular on Oz. Laurie Metcalf co-stars on The Norm Show and played Roseanne's sister on Roseanne. Joanne Allen's films include Pleasantville, The Ice Storm, and Nixon. Some terrific theater stories coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. Independent counsel Robert Ray ended the six-year Whitewater investigation today, saying there's not enough evidence to charge the president or the first lady. The probe, with an estimated cost of $52 million, scrutinized the Clintons' role in a failed Arkansas land development and quickly spread to other issues that eventually led to the president's impeachment. Ray issued a statement saying the investigation was drawn out because of delays in obtaining evidence, including the failure of the White House to turn over Mrs. Clinton's law firm billing records until 1996. White House spokesman Joe Lockhart said there's no merit to suggestions that the administration was responsible for the delay. There are reports of one and possibly two explosions at the headquarters of Britain's intelligence service. Firefighters and police have sealed off a section of London. Alistair Wanklin reports.
Eyewitnesses reported seeing a blinding flash and hearing possibly two explosions from near the building that's home to Britain's intelligence service, MI6. Police closed off streets nearby and searched adjacent buildings, including an apartment block. Meanwhile, police launches patrolled the River Thames, using powerful floodlights to illuminate the MI6 headquarters. London security services say they're trying to establish just what did happen. Investigators were not initially connecting the incident to any specific terrorist threat, despite the proximity to one of Britain's highest security institutions. For NPR News, I'm Alistair Wanklin in London.
Texas Governor George W. Bush campaigned in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia today looking for votes in a key electoral state. All this week, the Republican presidential candidate is arguing that his policies will help the middle class more than those of Al Gore, his Democratic rival. NPR's Anthony Brooks reports from Philadelphia.
With dueling slogans, Gore claims he's for the people and they're for the powerful, while Bush says he trusts the people to spend their own money and the vice president embodies the powerful. With his blueprint for the middle class, Bush is using this week to show how his policies would help middle-income Americans. In a Pittsburgh suburb this morning, Bush addressed a group of invited supporters who filled a town hall, among them a young family who Bush says would benefit from his $1.3 trillion tax cut, which includes a doubling of the $500 child credit.
I'd rather have this family have the extra $500 than Al Gore and the planners and thinkers in Washington, D.C. See, we trust these folks with the money.
The Gore campaign says Bush relies on carefully selected families to highlight the benefit of his proposals and says the largest share of his tax cut would benefit the wealthiest Americans. Anthony Brooks, NPR News, Philadelphia.
In stocks today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 101 points, or nearly 1%, to close at 10,687 in active trading. The Nasdaq gained 32 points. This is NPR News. A report released by the Federal Reserve today said economic growth remains strong and solid in much of the country, but it expressed concern about continued labor shortages. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
The Fed released its periodic assessment of economic conditions throughout the country, known as the Beige Book. The report said there are signs the economy is slowing down somewhat, but overall growth remains strong. Service firms in particular are doing well, although many continue to be hard hit by worker shortages. The report cited widespread accounts of wage increases, but in many cases they were offset by higher productivity, so the increases weren't necessarily passed on to consumers. Retail sales sales remain especially vigorous in some areas. Chicago reported strong back-to-school sales. The report was based on anecdotal information gathered between July 31st and September 11th. It is meant to guide Fed officials when they next meet to discuss interest rates on October 3rd. Jim Zeroli, NPR News, New York.
The agency that monitors energy prices for the industrialized nation said today that the world is not headed for an oil crisis. The International Energy Agency said it's not considering using its emergency supplies to hold down oil prices. Agency Chief Robert Priddle said oil supplies are tight, but that doesn't amount to a crisis. He told reporters in Paris that the agency wouldn't consider putting its emergency supplies to use unless there was an event that would take a substantial amount of oil off the market. As an example, Priddle said that if Iraq stopped selling oil, agency members would come together to decide how to use their emergency supplies. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, bringing soy and a variety of soy products to consumers around the world. ADM Supermarket to the world. On the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Steppenwolf Theater, the acclaimed Chicago company, is celebrating its 25th anniversary this season. And as President Clinton said when giving the company a National Medal of the Arts, Steppenwolf stages edgy, experimental productions that still manage to attract mainstream audiences. It's an ensemble company that shuns the star system, and yet it has launched its fair share of stars. Among the company's best-known alumni are John Malkovich, John Mahoney, Laurie Metcalf, and Joan Allen. Today we'll hear from four of the stars who were shaped by their experiences with Steppenwolf. We'll start with two of the three founders of the company, Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney. Sinise is the co-star of such films as Mission to Mars, The Green Mile, Apollo 13, and Forrest Gump. Terry Kinney stars in the HBO prison series Oz as a prison administrator. He was also a regular on 30-something. Gary Sinise went to high school with the company's third founder, Jeff Perry. Perry met Terry Kinney in college. Their first productions were staged in a Unitarian church, but in 1976, when the company grew to 9 members, they moved to the basement of a Catholic school in Highland Park. I asked Gary Sinise if there was anyone in the audience when they started.
There were nights where people came, and there were nights where people didn't come. You know, we actually really did, in the beginning, have to do a lot of selling of ourselves to try to get an audience. Here you got these, you know, college graduates and college folks that come and are down in this basement of a Catholic school, and how are you going to get people to come? Well, we did have a man who was helping us with business and trying to sell subscriptions, and I think maybe we sold 50 subscriptions or 100 subscriptions, maybe at the most, in the first couple years. But we would do all kinds of things to try to get audiences in there. We'd walk in parades, and we had bake sales and try to have, you know, benefits. And, you know, in the beginning, it was sort of a cool novelty. What's going on down there? There's these guys that are beating each other up in this basement, you know. We can get in and watch it for $3. Let's go, you know. And so it was kind of an interesting novelty. But as the winter months came along, we started to go into, serious audience emptiness. And I remember there was one show we did called Look, We've Come Through. And I think for that particular show, I remember we did a performance, I think, for maybe 2 people. And out of 88 seats, and there were times where we just didn't have much of an audience. But after a while, we started getting reviewed by the Chicago Tribune, and some of the Chicago papers started coming out and watching us, and we started to actually build one to the point where it became clear that it was time to move into the city.
Terry, when Gary was talking about how people would come to watch people beating each other up in the Steppenwolf company, what did he mean by that?
Well, I mean, one of the theater rules that we completely ignored was stage violence, with the quotation marks around staged. We tended, when there was violence on stage, and there quite often was in our plays, we found these one acts that we like to call now the axe murderer plays. Indian Wants the Bronx, plays by Leonard Melfi and Lanford Wilson, and, you know, very bleak early 70s plays. And we liked these plays a lot because they offered great roles for our actors, but there was usually some kind of violence and despair going on. And in it was one of our first four plays, Indian Wants the Bronx, Gary and I beat up our artistic director at the time, H.E. Backus. He played the Indian, with a lot of makeup, by the way. We just beat him to a pulp. And we didn't really mean to. We really loved the guy. But we did it to each other as well. And the audience truly felt they were in danger sometimes, because we would almost spill into the audience quite often. And we spent an hour before the show, while the other one act before us was running, improvising about 100 yards away, where there was this young kid that liked to hang out at our theater named Michael Unger. And he used to let us chase him around with knives in the neighborhood, et cetera. We would pretend to vandalize the neighborhood. We didn't really vandalize anything, but we became these kids. We just had a lot of fun playing. And the stage manager would open the back door to the theater and wave at us when it was time for the stage lights to come up. And we would sprint that 100 yards straight onto the stage. And it was, you know, a lot of fun. But we were so into it that we really did hit each other when we had to hit each other. We've learned to stop that now in our old age.
Why did you want to go so far as to actually hitting each other on stage as opposed to faking it theatrically?
Well, because we hated fake theatrical stuff. I mean, one of the reactions, the really visceral reactions we had as a group to seeing the theater that we were seeing in Chicago, was the phoniness of it. And, you know, not to disparage anyone's work, but at the time we were extremely cocky, you know, narcissistic youths, and we really felt that we could take it to another level, realism and hyper-realism. And so we tried to introduce this sort of filmic dynamic in the technical end, and we also tried to introduce a kind of a realism that we didn't feel people had seen.
I think, too, there was something that was really developing between the nine of us in the early days that was a lot about trust. And that, you know, we were smart enough not to do each other real damage on stage, but also, you know, we knew how to hit each other, how to punch each other, where it's not going to make the guy go to the hospital either, you know. And there was something about just the trust that was going on between us that was very, very important, and that you could trust somebody to be in control of themselves on stage enough that they could make it look really good, but that you weren't going to get, you know, seriously injured or something like that. We did have our cuts and bruises, but in fact, there was one night I closed a knife on my finger and had to get four or five stitches after the play. The play went on, and I just wrapped my finger up in some dirty newspaper that was laying on the ground and carried on with the play. So we got a little crazy, but we also really trusted each other on stage, and that was an important ingredient. You can't just have actors go wild without any sense of what's going on out there. And we always did have a good sense of how far we could go and what we could do and how far we could push each other.
In those early days, when there were times when no one showed up or a couple of people showed up, would the show go on anyways? And if it did, would you put as much into it as if it were a full house?
Yeah, absolutely we did. The show always went on if they wanted it to. I remember we did a musical, and it was a big mistake. It was called Mac Anything Goes Over the Rainbow, which was music by Harold Arlen, Kurt Weill, and who's the third one, Gary?
Cole Porter.
And Cole Porter, I'm sorry. So it was a sort of a cabaret show in which, again, the artistic director, Ichibakis, felt that it would be interesting to have non-singers singing these songs because they were, you know, they were songs to be acted. And we acted them badly. We sang them badly in gray turtlenecks and gray, no, black turtlenecks and gray pants, polyester pants. They all matched, and it was a bad idea.
From Kmart, by the way.
From Kmart, and they were quite inexpensive. We had a budget, as somebody said, a budget in the tens of dollars back then. One night there were two people there sitting in the audience, an elderly couple, and we were all peeking around the curtain saying, oh, gosh, I hope they stay, and, you know, I wonder if anyone else will show up, but no one did. So we went out. We walked out on stage, and we said, well, you're the only people here. Would it embarrass you to have us do the show? And they said, oh, gosh, no, it's like a command performance. We'd be pleased to have you do your show. So we did it. I mean, we did it full throttle because these two very grateful people were sitting out there beaming at us the entire time.
Did you get a standing ovation?
No, I don't believe so. I think they just sat and clapped at the end.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much. Good luck to you kids.
My guests are Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney, two of the three founding members of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney, two of the three founders of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago, and Steppenwolf is celebrating its 25th anniversary. Terry, so when Steppenwolf got together and there were nine players, were you all about the same age?
Yeah, we were basically all the same age. We had mostly just graduated. We were in the range of 22, 23 years old, all of us.
So did you have to impersonate older people if there were older people in your show?
Oh, yeah. We were the world's worst makeup artists, but we played all varieties of age. I remember it was not in the first year, but when I played the King in Exit the King.
Yeah.
I did the worst makeup you've ever seen in your life. I mean, we drew lines on our foreheads and, you know, made jowls with eyebrow pencils and, kind of rubbed dark stuff on our eyelids and stippled on things, you know, to make our skin look older and talked in old voices.
Did it ever occur to you to invite actors who were older into the company?
Never.
No.
Why not?
Well, we were, like I said, we lived in a vacuum in a way. We didn't know anybody except each other. Most of us worked in the same areas in the daytime so that we could support ourselves. Most of us worked at this mall called Northbrook Court Mall, which I understand is quite a booming, successful mall now. Well, at the time, it was like a ghost town. And Gary worked on a loading dock there at Neiman Marcus, and I worked at a clothing store, and Jeff Perry worked in an egg roll factory of some kind. And, the other people were kind of spread around there doing office jobs, et cetera. And at night, we built sets, and we rehearsed. And we built the theater when we first started by night before we would rehearse. And we just didn't know how to ask anybody to be in a play, not for a few years at least. In 1978, we did invite someone to come play Amanda Wingfield for us, who was a local Highland Park woman who did a remarkable job in the play. But that was the first time we had gone outside.
Steppenwolf was, especially in the early days, it's probably fair to say, a very close-knit company, and very much like a family, though often probably very much like a dysfunctional family. And I think, you know, actors had affairs with each other. Some actors married each other within the company. Is it possible to know the people you're working with too well, so well that it might interfere with your ability to act with each other, to really become different people with each other?
Gary and I talked about this earlier today, actually. We could do a major expose of all the affairs in the company. Well, again, we were a group of people living in a town which was a suburb of Chicago. So it was mostly people older than us and settled and married with children, and then high school kids and grade school kids. So nobody of post-college age. That being said, we all became embroiled in many, many ways. You know, there were lots of switching of relationships and broken hearts and friendships that needed to sort of like mend for a long time. Somehow, we always got the work on stage to, I guess I would have to say, transcend that. Maybe it was because of it that there was such energy on stage, but there was always a great deal of loyalty to the cause, which was to put on this great theater and hopefully have somebody recognize the fact that we were doing great theater. So no matter how we felt personally, there was always a lot of peer pressure to get over it and move on. We did that. We feuded, and our company meetings were the most remarkably dysfunctional thing you could ever see. Screaming and yelling, and we even had the police show up once. because it was, we got along in these groups. We were like a tribe of cave people, but somehow we would get on stage and the space between the actors would always be full.
I think the company wanted to be very non-hierarchical. How much power does a director have in a company that's trying to not have any hierarchies? Does it inhibit the ability of the director to direct?
There was always something very clear in our company, that there were leader figures, people with ideas, people with plays to bring in and direct, people with administrative ideas, and there were people that acted in plays. There was always friction about, who should have power and who does have power, et cetera, in the company meeting situation. But the leader figures always remained the leader figures. And there was never any proletariat that was very real. There was a hierarchy.
Terry, you once resigned in protest or in anger. I'm not sure what the circumstances were. And then you decided you wanted to go back into the Steppenwolf Company, and the members of the company had to vote to decide whether to let you come back. What was that about? Why did you resign, and then why did you decide you wanted to come back in?
Oh, gosh, who have you been talking to?
wasn't me.
No. I think I resigned over the fact that I was breaking up with a girl. I was very upset, and the current executive director, we had so many that we considered doing a benefit where we chained them all together and paraded them across the front of the stage. the current guy had this plan where we would clean out an entire crawl space of all the stuff that was in there, and it was in there before we ever came into this church basement. Clean it out, and then assign bathroom duties, you know, and I think I got assigned the first bathroom duty, and I said, well, I'll clean the toilet every day, but not by assignment. You know, this was where the proletariat was important to me. And I think I quit in protest, but it was probably some personal problem that I was having. I left for a while, and then I missed everybody, and my friends missed me. When I came back, somebody decided that there should be a company meeting, just to make it official, since I had left the company, that I should, be brought in by vote.
Gary, were you at that meeting?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I was shocked, and I had to wait upstairs, but I also felt it was kind of right, you know, it had been a while, been about 3 or 4 months. So I waited upstairs with a friend, and an hour passed, and then 2 hours passed. And I started to become very concerned about, you know, what are they talking about? You know, are they evaluating all of my, you know, personality traits, or what are they doing? Am I not a real company member? And I started really doubting that they were going to let me back in. And in reality, they were talking about a number of things, I heard later. Gary can talk to that. But the next thing I heard was a loud scream. Now, I mentioned a while ago that the police had come to a company meeting. This was the one. I heard someone screaming, and I didn't know what it was. I ran down the stairs, and the door to the theater was open, and no one was in there. So I ran outside, and they were all holding down. It was Moira. It was Gary's wife. She was upset about some other things as well, but she couldn't believe that they were talking about this. On my behalf, she was very upset. I've always been grateful for that. And she was screaming bloody murder, and the police kind of showed up, and we got rid of them. And then somebody turned to me in the middle of the fray and said, "Oh, you're in. You're back."
That kind of settled that.
Yeah. That was that.
Gary, why did it take so long to decide whether Terry Kinney should be allowed back in the theater that he co-founded?
You know, I mean, it's a long time ago, and I can't remember all the details of the meeting.
Senator.
But we had never, you know, we'd never faced this kind of thing before. So I assume we were yelling at each other about the principle of, you know, going off. Mm-hmm. And we leaving, and how that should affect the group. And I remember shortly after that, you know, Malkovich went off and did a play with some other company, and that was the first time that had happened, and we had to have a big meeting about that. You know, we had meetings all the time because we had to discuss, you know, what it was we were doing. And if we're going to be a theater, then we're going to all work together, and this is what we're going to do, and we're not going to do anything else. And, you know, yelling at each other about that kind of stuff. And that was the first time Terry quit.
Yeah, there'd been another. I quit another time as well.
I can't remember what that one was about, but it might have been about a girl. I don't know.
It could have been. It could have. Yeah, I mean, there was always that.
Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney are two of the three founding members of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. This is Steppenwolf's 25th anniversary season. Sinise and Kinney will be back in the second half of the show. This is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword VN. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From Saab, featuring an all-turbocharged lineup with safety features like the Saab Active Head Restraint System, saabusa.com. And from Princeton University Press, publishers of The Expanded Quotable Einstein, available in bookstores or online at www.pup.princeton.edu. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we continue our look at Steppenwolf. The theater company celebrates its 25th anniversary this season. We'll conclude our conversation with co-founders Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney. Then we'll talk to actresses Joan Allen and Laurie Metcalf about the sometimes dysfunctional theater family that produced a number of stars. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking with some of the celebrated alumni of Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater Company. This season, Steppenwolf is celebrating its 25th anniversary. Let's get back to our conversation with Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney, two of the three co-founders of the company. Did either of you ever feel any guilt when you started off doing movies and TV that you were, you know, abandoning your principles or selling out or leaving the company behind? Terry, any thoughts?
There was such a long period of time where we weren't doing much of anything except the theater that there wasn't a great deal of guilt. I mean, again, there were pioneers to go out forage in the entertainment world before most of us, John being one, Gare taking True West to New York. So there were those birth pains, you know, of departure there, but not so much with most of us. We were there for so long before we got cast in a TV show or a movie or somebody else's play that, no, there wasn't much guilt. There was a lot of fear, though, because we didn't have our peers around us to hold us up, help us. I think one of the reasons we stayed together for so long, and I'm not being facetious at all, is fear. Fear was a big factor of keeping us together. We were a bunch of really cornhead kids from the Midwest, and we were scared. We were scared of New York. We were scared of Hollywood and what it had to offer and all of the rejection and all of the judgment. You know, we didn't want any of that. So when we finally got involved with it, maybe we were a little more prepared, had a little more confidence.
Yeah, I think some of the members, you know, may not have even become actors. I mean, you can ask Laurie and Joan this. They've said it before, but they don't know if... you know, if they would have even gone into theater because of the, you know, they were both very shy and, you know, I think the support of the group really gave us all a confidence and helped us with the fear that we all had of going off on our own and trying it.
Yeah, Laurie used to say, I'm a legal secretary, acting is my hobby. And it was true. She could type 120 words a minute and she was a damn good legal secretary.
Did you ever ask yourselves, was it just coincidence that all these people who developed into great actors happened to be friends and happened to coalesce around Steppenwolf? Or do you think it's something about the experience of Steppenwolf itself that helped transform these people into great actors?
I'd say that, you know, every one of them had talent. You know, we all had a certain talent and a certain love for what we were doing, but the difference between, you know, just going off and going to Hollywood or New York and having an acting career and what that may have brought you was Steppenwolf and the kind of work that we did together and the kind of support that the group of us together gave each other allowed us to discover things and in a very uninhibited way, and we were able to, you know, to let ourselves show and play all kinds of different roles to stretch our talents and challenge ourselves, which turned us into character actors. You know, there's not one of us that is, you know, just a straight-up leading lady, leading man kind of romantic hero type. Every one of us are character actors, and that comes really, the strength of that comes from the confidence and support that we gave each other in the early days, I would say.
Well, congratulations to both of you on the 25th anniversary of Steppenwolf and on your own careers as well. It's really been fun to talk with you both. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney are two of the three founding members of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this season. The three founding members now make up Steppenwolf's executive artistic board. Joan Allen and Laurie Metcalf are two of the Steppenwolf alumni who have become stars. They both joined in the early days of the company. Joan Allen has since co-starred in such films as Pleasantville, The Ice Storm, and Nixon, and she stars in the upcoming film The Contender. Laurie Metcalf co-stars on The Norm Show and played Roseanne's sister on Roseanne. Laurie Metcalf, Gary Sinise said that you were a legal secretary during the early period of Steppenwolf. Did you think that that's what your profession was going to be, a secretary, and that theater would remain something of a hobby?
Yeah, I always, I actually enjoyed very much being a secretary. And I had the weird, skill of being able to type really fast.
Yeah, super fast. Oh, my God, like 120 words a minute or something.
Yeah, I would sort of go on, automatic pilot and, like, whiz through all these typing chores, which I loved. And there's something really rewarding to me about, having a job like that where you have so many papers on the left side of your desk at the beginning of the day, and you've transferred them over to the right side of your desk at the end of the day, and you don't take your work home necessarily. I liked that job very much. And, I would have been pretty content to stay there.
Joan, were you going to say something?
No, it's just funny. I was also a secretary for several years. I couldn't type nearly as fast as Lori, but it really kept me afloat. I mean, we weren't making any money or hardly any money, and financially we just couldn't swing it. And so I, for years until I came to New York when I was like 28, the whole time I was in Chicago, I, had a full-time job and would do the theater at night. And, I was just on this treadmill of literally, sometimes I lived like a block away from the theater, and sometimes I'd literally be in bed 15 minutes after the curtain came down. I would just come home, brush my teeth, go to bed, and then I'd be up at 6 to go to work the next day. And I did that for, several years, as did, like Lori and a lot of other members of the company.
Now, my understanding is that, at Steppenwolf, there were a lot of different configurations of romantic relationships. And that kind of thing could be so complicated in a small group that's working closely together, when relationships shift and all the kind of emotions and jealousies and so on that can surround that. Were you ever in the position of, and tell me if this is too personal, of being part of a couple within the company? And I'm wondering, if so, how that affected the acting dynamics when you got on stage?
I was in a relationship. One of the, when I first joined the company and visited John, I became involved with Terry Kinney for a couple of years. And I can say this because he's an excellent friend of mine, and I really like, we've maintained a really wonderful friendship over the years. But after a couple of years, we did split up, and it was very hard for me, especially because I think I was a very late bloomer, and I hadn't really had that experience in my teens like a lot of people have. It happened to be really late, so I was honestly very devastated for quite a while. And Lori actually gave me some really good advice. She, at one point, because I think I was moping around a long time, but still doing the shows and showing up, Lori, I think, just sort of took me aside and sort of reminded me that the company was bigger than the relationship at that point, and that I really should try my best to get over it, and that the company was a greater, larger thing, and the company needed to go on, and that actually sort of helped me. But it was difficult for a while. I mean, I had to really try to make a separation between my personal feelings, which I felt quite hurt at the time, and the work. But I managed to be able to do that to the point where I can say, Terry is a very good friend of mine, and we stay in touch. It's been, like 22 years ago now. It's been a long time, so.
Right. Laura, did you have to ever take that advice yourself?
Yeah, I was having a relationship with John, and when we broke up, and when we broke up, this happens all the time in really tightly knit groups. I'm sure there is a bit of the Peyton Place going on, and there are many breakups and reconfigurations. But what happens when you're forced in a way to keep working together? You tend to get over it a little bit quicker probably than you would if you vowed never to see that person again. And it's true that we have stayed friendly with, all the different couplings, And that comes with maturity and age also. But when you're in the midst of a relationship breaking up and yet you're still forced to work together, I think it's sort of a mixed blessing.
My guests are Joan Allen and Laurie Metcalf, two alumni of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater Company is celebrating its 25th anniversary. My guests are two alumni who have become stars, Joan Allen and Laurie Metcalf. Terry Kinney and Gary Sinise were talking about how, particularly in the early years, there was a lot of like physical violence in the shows, and they would actually beat each other up on stage and sometimes get hurt a little bit in the process. Did you get any blows yourself during that more physical period of Steppenwolf?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because the hardest blow I ever got was from Joan.
No.
Do you know what it was?
No, tell me, Lori.
I don't even know if you knew that you did it. But
oh,
we
no.
were doing a play called, what was the Five Women thing?
Was it Waiting for the Parade?
Waiting for the Parade.
Yes.
And I played this little, you know, bitchy woman who was in charge of everybody, and Joan's character was supposed to slap me, and she slapped me every night, and one night she got me across the ear somehow.
Oh.
And I was stunned for a second, and I had a ringing in my ear, and I think I saw stars.
Oh,
and that was a good one.
Yeah, I had to, when we did Balm and Gilead, I played a very tough lesbian. And I get into a fight with another woman over my girlfriend. You know, it's the Balm and Gilead takes place in an all-night diner in New York City, where a lot of, you know, transvestites and junkies and, you know, street people and stuff come in. It was this, you know, wonderful, wonderful show. One of the most fun I've ever had acting in my life when it really worked. It was really thrilling to be part of. But I had to get into a fight. And John Mahoney, I had to break up the fight and get in between me and this other woman. John had to get in between, and I had to reach over him, and I jammed my finger, right, my baby finger on my pinky on my right hand, right into his shoulder blade, because he moved just as I was going over. I fractured my knuckle that attaches to my hand. I fractured it on stage. It was so painful. But I had like another 15 minutes on stage before the act was over. And I had to like pretend that there was nothing going on. And I ran off stage as soon as it was intermission to the bathroom, because I thought I was going to vomit. I was in so much pain. And I was hugging the toilet, screaming about how much my finger hurt. And I had to, in the second act, I didn't have much to do, but I had to be on stage asleep, laying on a table in the second act. And they got me an ice pack, and they draped it over my hand, and they put this sweatshirt over it so you really couldn't see what was happening. And I had the ice pack, and I was in excruciating pain the whole time. And then they took me to the emergency room after that, and I ended up having a cast all the way up to my elbow. Which I continued to do the role because it still sort of worked for the part.
Right.
But we didn't choreograph our violence very much, did we, Laura?
We didn't have the patience for that. So we just let it go. We had a lot of energy. And so we would sort of wail on each other.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Joan Allen and Laurie Metcalf. They're two of the early members of the Steppenwolf Theater Company, which is based in Chicago and is now celebrating its 25th anniversary. When you started performing either, you know, in New York or in movies on TV, was it a difficult transition to be working with people who weren't your close friends, who weren't like family to you, and to be working in a... what I imagine was a more kind of high-pressure situation.
Yes, I was immediately struck by the high stakes of things outside of the company. When I auditioned while I was doing a play in New York and got my first small movie role, I was very scared, and since then, it kind of tainted me in a way. Since then, every time I go into an audition now, I choke a little bit. I'm not as, like, free as I usually am on stage, and that's in all my work I've found. The place that I am feel the freest is on stage. I don't like a camera anywhere near me, so it's a little ironic that every Friday that's what happens, you know, for the last 12 years.
For the TV shows you've been on, uh-huh. For the Norm Show and Roseanne.
But I don't like it. I've never been comfortable with it, and that's the only time I do loosen up is on stage. And I do have a theory that the people who start out on stage in their acting work, they can do all three media. They can do, you know, movies and television and stage. And the people that start out with the camera work, I think they have a harder time transferring over to theater if they ever even would want to do that.
Joan Allen, what was that transition like for you?
I ultimately don't feel, I think, quite the same as Laura, because I think when I did break out and start doing other things, it was the right time for my own personal development that I really needed to, you know, because it was like going from your own family into another family of Steppenwolf, and which was a wonderful family, and as I said, I wouldn't be an actor without it, but it was time almost to get kicked out of the nest of that family and be in the larger world. And I think that's sort of what Gary was trying to do when he said it was so important for True West to come to New York. Gary could see that it really, we needed to not just be localized in Chicago, but that the company had potential to be nationally known, if not at this point even internationally known. And it was, he had sort of a vision. If anybody had a vision, he could see a long-term thing, because I think we didn't really think in the long term. But what ultimately happened to me, I think because of having that ensemble experience and seeing everybody as an equal, and there wasn't really a star sort of situation. I mean, there were people who were, you know, recognized more than other ensemble members in certain plays, but it the baton sort of just kept getting passed around because everybody got recognized, you know, and for their work at different times, as much as they do in Chicago, which isn't really flowery, you know, it's kind of they don't really go over the top with that. But I felt like I'd worked with the best actors in the world at Steppenwolf, and so when I branched out and started working with also amazing actors, I felt very well equipped to play off of them, because I thought we're all just actors pulling together trying to tell a story to the best of our ability. And I think that's what Steppenwolf sort of made me view the whole process in that way.
Did any of the techniques that you used at Steppenwolf in your rehearsal or in your stage performances seem out of place when you move to movies or to television?
Yeah, it's a little out of place. You find yourself when you've worked for, you know, the first 10 years solid of your acting career saying, you know, okay, now we're going to need a toaster for this play. Who's got a toaster at home? You know, and so you say, oh, I can bring mine in. And then you go to, like, a movie, and you volunteer your toaster, and everyone stares at you.
The one comment that was made in one of the early reviews, the first or second year, was the set ran into the tens of dollars.
Yeah.
That's what one of the critics said about the set.
Yeah, yeah. It still flabbergasts me, some of the money that's thrown around in these other, you know, in movies and TV. And stage, too, sometimes, you know, when I think it could be simplified a little bit and still be fine. But that was the thing that first struck me right away, is that we had, ours was more of a group effort.
Do you have any regrets about things that happened at the company?
Savages?
too many nude scenes?
were there nude scenes?
We
did this play. I wasn't involved in it. We did this play called Savages, which was about the Yanomami tribe in South America. And it was like all these, you know, naked painted bodies, like 30 of them on stage. And
a little misguided.
It was a little bit, but I'm so glad we did it, because we have such entertainment value talking about it amongst ourselves.
Yes, many stories connected to that.
Exactly.
Were you uncomfortable being naked on stage?
No, not at all, unfortunately. after you do it that one, during that one preview, there's no problem at all. I think we did one too many. But no, I would never in a million years, even when I was, even 25 years ago, much younger, would have ever done it for a movie. Uh-huh. But on stage, I don't know. I just feel a looseness that I could do about anything.
Maybe it's because people are further away also. You don't have a close-up.
Yeah, and it's not being recorded for all time.
I actually wasn't in Savages. I was doing another play outside of the company, but I was around a lot, I observed.
Well, Joan, I'm thinking of that 20-minute nude scene at the top of Loose Ends.
Yes, Lori, I know. Yeah.
Oh, that was way too much.
And in a small theater.
The lights came up, and it was me and Gary Sinise, and we'd hear, oh, God. Two of us rolling around naked.
My guests are Lori Metcalf and Joan Allen, two alumni of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater Company is celebrating its 25th anniversary. My guests are two alumni who have become stars, Joan Allen and Lori Metcalf. Steppenwolf has such an amazing track record for having alumni who have just become such important actors. There's you both and, Gary Sinise and Terry Kinney, John Malkovich, John Mahoney. I'm wondering if you think... what you think that's about? Was it all that you were that special and that talented when you got together, or do you think it was something about the experience that was transforming?
Well, what ultimately happened, I think that it was an excellent training ground, because in Chicago, there was no film and television industry to pull you away from the theater. So I think one of the things that really allowed the company to flourish and all the actors to work on their craft and improve was because we had the time to do it. We would just do our plays. There was nobody saying, come and do our soap opera, come and be in our movie. So we got to practice a lot. And I think that's, for me and for many people, I think that's the best way to learn. So once the company broke out, though, and came to New York, which I think was the right thing to do, it became people... outside of Chicago got to see the talents and abilities of these actors who had worked really hard and trained for a really long time. And it sort of makes sense to me that that people have gotten recognized, and there are even more Gary Cole and Jeff Perry and have been on television and done movies, and Glenn Headley, and that it was just, they were very well-trained actors that just once the company broke out more nationally and internationally that deserved the recognition.
Lori, any thoughts?
We were also very lucky that we had some hidden directing talents in the group that we didn't know of until we found out, not only do we want to just do all these meaty roles back to back to back, we have to have somebody to direct them. And we didn't know anybody else, so we had to look inside the company at first, way back, to direct each other, and it turns out that we had some great directors in the company. I think they would always prefer to ultimately act, but some of the people who stepped up to the plate to direct early on also contributed to making us all better actors.
When was the last time you each performed in a Steppenwolf production?
It's been 10 years for me. It's been a decade.
And Lori?
I was there 2 summers ago to do Beauty Queen of Lanan, directed by Randy Arney. So, and Rick Snyder was also in the play.
Do you think of yourselves as still connected to the company in some way, or is that just something from the past?
Oh, I think of myself as very connected. I think we're chained to each other in a way. You know, we have a history that we can always reflect back on and look forward to working with each other in the future, and we'll always be there. It's a very comforting thing. But I do feel still very connected to the theater.
Yeah, I feel very connected too, even though I haven't done a play for a long time. That's been a personal choice of mine. It's nothing to do with Steppenwolf, but I still feel very, very connected. Annie Leibovitz came and took a photograph of for commemorating the 25th anniversary last, I think it was last spring, and she commented after she took the photograph, we were all gathered, she never really had seen a group of people who so loved being together and were so excited and happy to be seeing each other and talking to each other that she'd ever photographed in her
right.
in her career. And she was really very impressed by that, and it was really really meant a lot to, I think, all of us that she made a comment on it. But I think it's a very a genuine response, you know, that we all have to each other.
I remember when she came in to photograph it, it was our first really group thing that we had done for that weekend of celebrating the 25th anniversary. And those comments that she made really sunk in, really, really clicked with people of the achievement that we had made. You know, we it just hadn't sunk in yet, you know, of why she was there and what she was recording.
Right.
Yeah.
Was the fact that we had done this. You know, and what she said that day really made it sink in.
Laurie Metcalf and Joan Allen are alumni of the Steppenwolf Theater Company in Chicago. Allen stars in the forthcoming film The Contender. Laurie Metcalf co-stars on The Norm Show. We wish Steppenwolf a happy 25th anniversary. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Monique Nazareth, Amy Salad, and Phyllis Myers, with Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, and Megan Howell. Our program was directed today by Sue Spolin. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From BEA, an e-commerce transactions company providing end-to-end solutions for the development and deployment of e-business applications. BEA.com. From Wilmington Trust, recognizing worth in individuals and in unique programs like Fresh Air. And from Random House Incorporated's Bantam Books Division, publisher of Sabbath, Finding Rest, Renewal, and Delight in Our Busy Lives by Wayne Muller. Now in paperback. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, gossip columnist Liz Smith on the history of gossip and the parts of her life she's tried to keep private. Also, we meet comic Mark Maron. He's currently performing his comic monologue, The Jerusalem Syndrome. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.